At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, Whovians, new and old. Alicia here.
With John, and we're the Lorehounds, your guides to the timey-wimeyness of the universe, here to discuss the 2024 Doctor Who Christmas special, Joy to the World.
Holy Nicola Coughlin, that was fun. Who's ready to unlock the secrets of time?
Stick around until the end for more information about what's going on in the network and how you can be a part of it.
So we're going to start with some spoiler-free hot takes for anyone who's like, I don't know, should I jump in here? So, and we'll let you know before we get into the spoilers themselves. But, John, what are your overall spoiler-free thoughts on this episode?
This Doctor Who episode is like a lot of Doctor Who episodes for me, where I'm like, if this were another universe, this might not land. But It works as a Doctor Who camp Christmas special.
Right.
You know, right. Like this is... this is peak Doctor Who, like an insane premise, a lot of wackiness, a lot of the Doctor oscillating. Yeah, a lot of the Doctor oscillating between like wacky guy just running around explaining things, over explaining things, like you just said, hand waving, and then suddenly being very emotional. Mm-hmm. And that to me is probably like peak New Who.
Right. Yeah, my sister, I have to say, I showed her the trailer for this, and she's like, well, I see he's still crying.
This is the crying doctor for sure. I don't think we've seen any other doctor. I think probably 10 comes second, but I don't think we've seen any other doctor cry as much.
He's in touch with his emotions. And this is kind of about him getting in deeper touch with his emotions. I liked how tongue-in-cheek it was about the hand-waviness. You know, we'll talk a little bit about a couple examples when we get into it. But I thought it was self-aware, but also, it was cheesy, but in the way that a Doctor Who Christmas special is supposed to be. So for me, it worked. To whom would you recommend this episode?
Ooh, honestly, I think this one is more for the established Whovians than it is for new people. I don't think this is as good of an onboarding point as last year's Christmas special.
Uh-huh.
How about
you? Do you think you need to have seen other episodes to enjoy this one?
No, I don't think you need to, but I think there's going to be a lot you're going to miss. Like a lot. Compared, again, last year felt like it was new era of Who, new Doctor.
Right.
We're going to onboard you. This one is really
explain light. Things. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. This one is no explanation. You're going right in. All you could tell from this, he doesn't even say the word Time Lord, right? For some reason, knows things about time travel, has a blue box, and cries a lot. That's basically all you learn about this guy, right? He doesn't have chairs.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He doesn't have chairs. Yeah, that's important. Yeah, I mean, I guess for onboarding, the last one was definitely better in that regard because it was specifically designed to bring in new fans. So definitely recommend people check that out. Had Singing Goblins. I liked the last one more than you did. Mm-hmm. So onboarding aside, how do you think this one stacks up to other, to that Doctor Who Christmas special and others in the past?
I think I did like the last one better, to be honest with you.
Okay.
It did feel more cohesive. I think this one had some pacing issues that really made it a little bit hard to get into at first. I did get into it by the end, but I do think the other one had a better structure and a better gambit.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I like this one. You know what my favorite is? It's actually a New Year's special. What is it called? It's the one with the time loop with the Daleks.
Oh, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
And it's funny because that's part of the Jodie Whittaker era, which I think Jodie Whittaker is a great undervalued doctor. But we have talked previously about how that wasn't necessarily the strongest writing.
Correct.
Who history. So this was, you know, this was after that whole Flux storyline that I personally really struggled through. And then suddenly we got this great time loop New Year's Eve special in this case. And it was like, oh, wow, we're back.
Yeah. And that was also in the era where, and I know this made a lot of people mad because Doctor Who had had Christmas specials like forever.
Right.
At least. Mm-hmm. And this was when Chris, what's his name now? I've purged him from my memory.
Chibnall?
Chris Chibnall, thank you. Chris Chibnall was just like, no, we're doing holiday specials now. And it just, I think inclusivity is important.
Mm-hmm.
We'll say the Doctor Who Christmas specials were never religious. So I don't think that was the problem.
Right.
It was more just like a ritual, like December 25th every year, we're all going to gather around.
Right.
And we're going to watch this guy, this madman in a box, go on a wacky adventure. And what's always fun about them is, you always get some kind of like new companion that's going to be a one-off companion. I feel like you often get that at least.
Right.
And you're always charmed by them. And then for some reason they can't go with the doctor and you're like, oh, so that's kind of just what you got to expect. So when I see Nicola Coughlan on this, I'm like, well, I wish she were a long-term companion,
right.
But whatever happens with her, I'm going to have a good time.
Right. She's busy. She's doing quite well.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I love the introduction in this. We're obviously going to talk about this more on the spoiler side of things, but I love the introduction of the Time Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to ask, where would you go first in the Time Hotel?
Ooh, the study of J.R.R. Tolkien in 1950.
Okay, okay.
Oxford to sit. No, I take that back. Oxford in the 1940s to have tea with the Inklings.
Okay. Yeah, I would choose first to go to the future, but I don't even know if that's an option. We didn't really see that.
That's true.
If you can only go to the past, I think I might go meet Baruch Spinoza from the 17th century in Amsterdam.
Okay.
Just be very curious to pick his brain and just see Amsterdam in the Golden Age.
Or we could go to the Christmas 2024 room, meet up with a doctor, become companions. Though there's an awful lot of running involved, and I don't know if I can handle that.
Mm. Yeah, I'm a little out of shape, but maybe that would be good for me.
the Doctor Who regime.
Exactly.
Richard running Simmons, watch dinosaurs. Out. And Shuti Gatwa has you running for your money.
Fighting the power of Mavity. Did you notice they said Mavity this episode?
Yeah. Do you like that we're continuing this, that this is going to be a thing now forever, probably?
Yes, I do, actually.
Okay.
So for anyone who doesn't know, this was the 60th anniversary specials. They meet with Isaac Newton and they kind of accidentally mess with him creating, you know, coming up with the word gravity, and he comes up with the word Mavity instead. And now, ever since, they just keep using Mavity instead of gravity, which is no comment. Just throw it in there.
Right.
Yeah.
And that, like, things like that, I don't think you need to watch something to, like, enjoy. Like, you'll just miss that joke. It's fine. Mm-hmm, like, that's not a big deal. I do think that to really enjoy this special, you need to have watched at least the first Nishuti Gatwa season.
Okay.
But I don't think you need to watch all of... I think the whole season. You need that.
Yeah,
you need the emotional arc of him.
Right.
His first new companion. his losing of the companion, his sort of dealing with the fact that he is underneath this all still a little depressed. I think you need some background on this character to walk in here, because otherwise, well, I don't have any chairs. Well, what the hell does that mean?
Well, if you don't see him losing Ruby, then yeah, it doesn't. There are certain aspects that don't make sense. But okay, now I'm flirting with spoilers. So shall we get into the spoiler section?
Yes, let's do it.
Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers. Okay.
Delete. All right.
So this episode was directed by Alex Sanjeev Pillai, and that's a director from Newcastle who's known for episodes of Bridgerton and like The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, Riverdale, etc. And the writer for this one is former Doctor Who showrunner Stephen Moffat. So,
oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that explains why it's so fucking sad at parts.
But the official log line from Disney is when Joy, Nicola Coughlan, opens a secret doorway to the Time Hotel, she discovers danger, dinosaurs, and the Doctor. But a deadly plan is unfolding across the Earth just in time for Christmas. And I just have to point out, she's not actually the one who opens the door, but fine, whatever.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I did like the gambit of this. I liked the whole, we have these fixed time portals that are physically linked, and so we can't create paradoxes. Very fun. Very fun. Very timey-wimey.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have him, he decides to pose as room service with a ham and cheese toasty and a pumpkin latte, which actually sounds like something I would order except for the ham.
Is a toasty just a panini?
It's usually made with regular bread.
But a panini can be too, right? You just have to press it.
I thought panini was made with panini bread.
All right, we're at panini versus toasty.
Well, toasty is just basically like a grilled cheese, but often it has ham in it.
Okay. I don't know. Can someone write in? Can a Brit write in, please? I'm very confused.
It's in
by
a
your
Dutch
lingo.
Thing too. It's a Dutch thing too, and that's why I pronounce it toasty. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just a normal grilled cheese sandwich, only it very often has ham in it. But I don't eat ham, so.
See, I was not sold on paninis needing a specific type of bread. That's why I was like, what's the difference?
Oh, I've only seen a panini with panini bread. Otherwise, it's not.
Isn't that a ciabatta?
A ciabatta is a different type of bread.
Than the panini bread?
Yes.
This is a riveting podcast here. We're really getting deep into sandwich nuance.
I know all the breads. It's a special skill that will take me far.
Okay. Well, thank you for my bread education today.
So the premise of this whole time hotel thing is that there's always a funny locked door in a hotel. That door. And obviously, a lot of the times, the door is just like the door that connects, you know, two rooms can be en suite, so you can have a, you know, have families stay next to each other and have a door between them. Although I have to say, this made me think of for my sister's wedding in, when was that, September? We stayed in a hotel and the room that I had one of those doors. But the weirdest thing about it was that there was something wet leaking from underneath. And like I told them at the front desk and they were just like, oh yeah, no, it's yeah. Okay. And so it just made me think, it just made me think on the other side of that door is the Time Hotel. And that's like an ocean or I don't know.
Yeah. It's what was the name of the guy who wouldn't fail him? Who wouldn't fail the doctor?
Trev.
Trev spilled like the coffee carafe, and he's very upset with himself.
Right. So we see the doctor checking in on a few different times and locations, which are actual historical moments. So we first see him visit the Christmas Blitz at the Queen's Hotel in Manchester in 1940, where he meets Basil and Hilda Flockhart. And these two characters, Basil and Hilda, seem to be made up for the show. If anyone knows differently, please let me know. But it's funny because the other ones aren't. We'll get to that. But and this makes me wonder, though, there must be a reference that I'm missing because Basil says he knew two women who lived up that way. And I like, who? That seems specific. Who are the two women?
I don't know.
But he also says that, you know, the Blitz is happening, you know, basically it's World War II. And he says it's the end of everything we hold dear. Democracy itself will fall. And this, that felt really on point for the moment that the world's in right now. And maybe reminding us that people survive that, hopefully we'll survive this.
Well, that's a lovely thought, Alicia. I hope you're right.
Me too. Me too. And then we switch to the Orient Express in Italy in 1962, where he meets Sylvia Trench. Now, Sylvia Trench, I'm pretty sure they're referring to the James Bond character.
What?
Who? Yeah, she was basically his first romance in the films, and it's actually from him, from her in Dr. No, which came out 1962, so the year that that he's visiting. She's the one who first said Trench, Sylvia Trench, in the movies, and then Bond took that Bond, James Bond, from that in the films.
That's funny.
And she was going to be. She was the only Bond girl who, before they rebooted with Daniel Craig, she was the only Bond girl who appeared in more than one movie. And they were actually going to have her as a regular girlfriend of Bond's in the series. But then they're like, nah, let's make him a womanizer instead.
Mm. Of course, you know, look, man can't be tied down if he's going to be a spy.
Right, exactly.
She can't do it.
And we see her, you know, she's reading Murder on the Orient Express by Agatha Christie,
right,
which is on the nose. But actually, it turns out that in there, she's hiding some letters. And did you read this? I wasn't sure. There's another reference here that I'm not completely sure that I got, that he kind of like helped her realize she was gay. Is that what you got out of it? She was writing love letters?
I think maybe he just saw her. I think that she was writing letters to a woman. She knew that she was gay.
Right.
I think.
But she said, thank you.
I think what it was it, he, it's not the 1950s, right? Or it was 1962. Mm-hmm. 1962, this was not a time where, and especially in England, I believe it was still illegal to be homosexual. That was like a thing. So I think he saw her as a gay person and he said, you should send them. And he just like talked to her like she was normal, and she just went like, "Thank you, you know, I'm a human being for a minute."
Right. Yeah, I found that interesting because if they're doing that as the Bond character, I don't know of anything about that particular Bond character being supposedly, you know, gay. But there is another one, Pussy Galore, but that's not who this is. So I feel like there are some references that we're going to learn afterwards when we get some, you know, because we're recording this before it's out for the general public. So I'm sure we're going to get some more interviews with Stephen Moffat and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. We didn't note that at the top, but we did get a screener from Disney. So thank you, Disney.
Thank you.
We're finally in the Mouse Club. It took a while.
We're finally on the screener server.
Exactly. So thank you, Disney, for this. Not sure if we'll get screeners for anything else, Doctor Who, as it goes forward. But for now, we are able to give this to you right after the episode is public.
Yeah. And so the third wrong location that he visits is Base Camp on Mount Everest in 1953. And there he meets Edmund Hillary, who is like, I actually didn't realize it was Edmund Hillary until I saw the credits. But Edmund Hillary is a real mountaineer from New Zealand, very famous mountaineer, and he often climbed with Tenzing Norgay, who's a mountaineer from Nepal, and so that was the other character who was there. So those two are real people.
Well, I mean, but now they have no rope. So what are they
going to do? I hope they had more rope than that, because they seemed not that bothered by it.
I don't know. I was like, are they going to be able to climb? What's going on here?
I mean, I have to say, this was kind of a more dickish doctor for what we've seen from Nshuti.
Yeah. He was really like, I'm going to do what I need to do no matter who is getting inconvenienced.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's going through stuff, I guess. But
although I did enjoy him going, oh, I have a homing beacon for fresh milk. I guess I could just get a fridge. But
so then, yeah, we finally meet Nicola Coughlan, who plays Joy, at the Sandringham Hotel in London in 2024, so our year. And basically she's in her room, she's feeling sad, she's feeling lonely, and then suddenly a Silurian with a briefcase shows up, which we'll find out later is the manager of this other time hotel, and says, "The starseed will bloom and the flesh will rise." What did you think when you first heard that? What did you expect?
Just spooky Stephen Moffat nonsense. Like, you know, it's just like, it was very the empty child kind of thing, just like repeating mm-hmm. something creepy until something happens. Although it's interesting that like most of Stephen Moffat's creepy sayings, you know, what was the one with the skeletons in the library?
Oh yeah, I don't remember.
Hey, who turned out the lights? Like he loves doing this. He loves mm-hmm. doing a repeated spooky thing. But those are all about darkness, and this one is the first one that's about light, which is cool.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And so then we visit the Time Hotel itself, which is in London in 4202. And we see people who seem to be coming from all times and places based on how they're dressed. And apparently there's a special going on, Christmas everywhere all at once. And that's where we meet Trev Simpkins, who's played by Joel Fry. Were you familiar with the actor who played Trev?
Yeah, so that is Game of Thrones. We had him as, I can't remember. It was the one who tried to get, who was he? Oh, he was the one who married Daenerys in Marine.
He married Daenerys? I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was like a political marriage. Hisdar Zolarak.
Oh, okay. Okay, wow. Totally forgot about that. Yeah, I know him from other stuff. Like, I know he plays Frenchie in Our Flag Means Death. I haven't watched Our Flag Means Death yet, but I know him from, I don't know, a bunch of, like, he's in Cruella. He's in this movie called Bank of Dave. He seems to be just one of those British actors who pops up in every British project.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely in a lot of stuff. He was in Yesterday, I think, too. I was just looking at his IMDb. Right.
Mm-hmm.
That so was good. He's got a lot of minor roles, which is cool. We like actors like that.
But he was one of those, like, he's a famous enough face that I was surprised by what happened to him in a moment. But first we get, I love this line where the doctor's like telling him, okay, I emptied my mind, so I forgot everything to be fresh. And he's like, oh, should I empty my mind too? And the doctor says, in your case, I'm not sure that's necessary. Like, damn.
Yeah.
Did you notice there's a lot of, it's bigger on the inside. So for example, we got the mug, it's bigger on the inside. Later a microwave, it's bigger on the inside.
You know, that was one of the things where I was like, we might be overdoing this one.
Right.
We might be overdoing this. Can he make anything bigger on the inside? Like,
apparently. I don't understand. Apparently. He's been underusing that skill then.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a useful skill.
Maybe that's how Mary Poppins got her bag. We need that episode.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be great.
What did you think about this concept of the psychically grafted radio that Trev has in his head? So he can talk to the doctor.
I think it worked as a plot device. It was interesting that they did that and then he never got to use it really.
Well, yeah, that's true. Later it comes back when he comes
back. But did it really come back or was it just like the idea of it? You know what I mean? Like if it was just his consciousness that was uploaded. Isn't it basically just like he had the idea of the psychic? I don't know. Everything's too timey-wimey with that. I don't understand how that works.
Right.
But, I think he kind of just communicates with the doctor via the company? The weapons company using their server.
Villengard, yeah.
Villengard, thank you.
Yeah.
And Villengard, of course, was the same company from, but this is what I mean. Like, we need people to watch the last season to really understand the implication of that.
Right, exactly. Especially, yeah, when we see them come back at the end as sort of projections.
Right.
Yeah.
And are we going to talk about sort of production knowledge we have? Maybe
sure,
let's do a section at the end about it, because I don't want to spoil people if they want to just be surprised about things.
Okay, what do you mean?
Casting, how that has to do with Villengard and whatnot for season two.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this case, this mysterious case that's being carried around. So the case is like kind of possessing people. And it says something, and whenever it attaches to a new person's wrist, it says upgrading. And then we see them do like a lizard blink. So I thought we first saw the Salarian come through, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, like the theory about the lizard people who live under the earth. That's a real thing in Doctor Who. And they're just Salarian people who show up sometimes.
Well, you know, it was named after the Doctor Who race, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, the scientist who named this theory named it after the Doctor Who race.
Okay.
So it's a chicken and egg reversed.
Hmm. So yeah, we get that, like, the people who hold the case seems to have that lizard blink, which I was surprised by. Maybe that was supposed to be Mr. X. But then once the case moves on to someone else, the person dies. They just have this like sparkly disappearing moments, which kind of looks like they're being burned off by a star, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think Joy could have never lived? She would have just burned up anyway.
I mean, he got her off the case.
That's true, and she was off for quite a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. But I was so we find out the case is a Starseed containment module, which is like Villengard, this weapons company that turns up in Doctor Who stuff. They decided that they want to grow their own private star, because that will be a private energy source for them. And but in order to do that, yeah, stars take a long time to grow. So they need the time hotel. And so they need to go back 65 million years and plant it there and let it grow. And yeah, we'll get back to that. But I was so upset to see Trev disappear. I was so surprised, because I was like, wait, but I know that actor.
I mean, as soon as the case started saying upgrading access, I knew he was done.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of dopey. Like, he just wasn't that smart. He does have more access than the bartender. It was going to happen. It just was going to happen.
Right. Well, it also sets the stakes, so that when the case gets, you know, attached to Joy's wrist, we're like, oh, no.
Right.
And she starts, you know, apparently as soon as you get the case attached to you, you start to take on the case's mission. And I love the doctor says to her, you are being mansplained by a briefcase. And she said, I thought I was being mansplained by you.
Yeah. So overall, I just want to say, I think underutilization of Nicola Coughlan in the episode, I think she's funnier than she was in this episode. And I didn't expect them to make her do her Dairy Girls accent or anything.
Right.
But I did expect them to have her give a lot more pushback to the doctor. She really only got like two scenes to do that. And that was disappointing to me. So I just want to say, use Nicola Coughlan more. That was one of my criticisms of the episode.
Yeah, I think so. They had actually, when they casted her for this, apparently this was before Bridgerton, at least.
Oh, really?
So they, you know, she's gotten a lot bigger since, you know, she's a much bigger name since they first cast her in this.
She's had quite the career the last few years. Yeah.
Oh yeah, she's doing well. Love
good
to
for
see
her.
It. Yeah,
she's very funny. I've not seen Bridgerton. I have it on my queue. I have it on my queue. I want to watch it. It's just finding the time. I can't watch it around my kids, so it's just like, you know.
Yeah, that's fair.
This stuff, you could put this on around again. This is definitely kid-friendly, I think.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, that's the idea, right?
Yeah, exactly. This is a family show. You can put it around your kids and everyone's fine. Except it will also... There was a great... I was listening to a gaming podcast once. Gary Whitta was on it. I don't know if you know him. He was a writer on Rogue One, and he does a gaming podcast with some other people. And he said, yeah, Doctor Who was all about cowering behind your parents' sofa while you were a kid, because the monsters were always scarier than they should be.
Not me. I'm facing the TV.
Fair enough.
So we do, I said I like the other time loop episode. We do get a time loop in this episode where basically the case holder, for some reason, does not know the security code, which, fine, okay, we'll go with it. The doctor throws out these random explanations like, can't use the TARDIS because that would re-engage the causal nexus. Like, okay, sure, moving on. Can't use the TARDIS. Fine, check.
Yeah.
And then he gets help from his future self, who tells him he has to go the long way around. And this is where we get this, him yelling about chairs. He's like, you know, he's mad that his future self is leaving him behind to go the long way around, and he'll find out what that means. And he yells, "You live in a great big spaceship, but there aren't any chairs, and you haven't even noticed because no one ever comes around." And I personally found yelling at himself to be a very relatable thing.
Yeah. So I want to ask you something about this. Do you think that that is true? Because, I mean, look at the 13th Doctor's era. She had a whole crew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people do come around.
Right.
He just doesn't go around to them.
Right. That's true. I mean, I guess he's just feeling lonely because he always goes through this when he loses a companion.
I know. It's like his breakup phase.
Yeah. He cannot. He's a serial monogamist. He cannot be on his own.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Well, he gets poly a little bit sometimes. I mean, look, again, 13th Doctor era.
Sure. Okay. He's a serial relationshipist.
Yeah. Fun times. And I miss Amy and Rory. Shout out to Amy and Rory.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my favorite companions, done dirty in the end. Not really. It was a very beautiful ending.
I don't know who my favorite. I always say Martha. I think it is Martha.
Turns
up in Torchwood is my favorite.
She's fine. She's fine.
I liked her because she was like her own kind of medical doctor, and she was she didn't need him as much as the others, and I kind of like that about her.
Well, I think she would be 10 times better if we didn't have that silly unrequited love plotline with her.
Yeah, sure, fine. Yeah.
But that's a writing fault. It's not an actor fault or anything.
No. She's great.
That was Russell T. Davis just being like, I need to make sure that everyone wants to be with the doctor.
And probably self-insert doctor anyway. So there's also, we find out that like when the Time Hotel isn't connected, there's just a brick wall behind the door.
Mm-hmm.
And so he can't get through. And so he ends up taking that room where he found Joy in that London 2024 hotel. And he just stays there for an entire year and works there because he knows he needs to be in New York for Christmas of 2025 because there'll be an opening in the hotel there because he saw that in the program, basically, from the Time Hotel. Mm-hmm. And he meets a woman named Anita who works at the hotel. And she is very cool about the fact that a lot of weird stuff's going on around him. He's got psychic paper that knows people's food orders before they order, which I didn't realize psychic paper worked that way, but fine.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen it work in the opposite way before?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't recall that. Maybe someone who is more familiar with the classic stuff can tell us if that's ever been a thing. And also the mop mops itself. Well, how does that work?
You know, I'm not going to question it. Can I also say, I really like the jab at diet culture. Well, I'm on a diet. Well, the paper says you want this.
Yeah.
And he just walks away. He doesn't invite any debate. He's like, well, that's what you're getting. So bye.
Worst server ever.
And yet his boss loves him.
Yeah. My favorite bit is the plunger. He's handed a plunger and he looks at it and he goes, is this armed? Because it looks like a Dalek.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
It's really funny. Although now we know with that short bit from the 14th Doctor's run that the Doctor is the one who just took a random plunger and put it on the Dalek.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how canon that bit is, but yeah.
I want it to be canon. I think that's hilarious. I want it to be canon,
yeah. And then we get introduced, so we have the whole chair thing, and so he and Anita start chair night, which is when they actually sit down together and talk and play games. And at the end of this year, he gives this goodbye pep talk to her, and it honestly got me teary.
Yeah.
I wonder, so, and they have this thing where, you know, they talk about the song For Auld Lang Syne, and so that's what they say to each other at the end. And I'm wondering and kind of hoping that Anita will show up again.
I think she could. I mean, she's going to work at the Time Hotel now. We know that.
Right.
I will say that this section, his year, did take me out of it a little bit. It did stop the pacing in its tracks.
Oh, it was my favorite part of the episode.
Really? I was like, we are still here.
But that's
maybe
how
that was part of the point.
Yeah.
But Also, I'm a little confused why this was such a big deal for the Doctor to stay on Earth for a year and stay in one place. I'll remind you, the 12th Doctor spent 50 to 70 years teaching at a university, not traveling on the TARDIS.
Yeah.
The third Doctor was exiled to Earth for 6 years with no working TARDIS. I don't think this is actually a new thing for him.
Did Stephen Moffat write those?
He did. Yeah, he was showrunner for the 12th Doctor.
Okay, that's true. That's true. I don't know.
So I'm just like, I don't think that I don't new think face, this is actually new a new thing. This was not. Yeah. He's like a whole year. I'm like, yeah, you did like 50 of these like two seasons ago.
But this time he has to stay in a crappy hotel.
Yeah, at least he was a professor last time.
Yeah, but then at the end of the year, it's Christmas Eve 2025, and he goes to New York City to the Exeter Hotel because he knows that a door is going to open there. And so he gets back to the Time Hotel and goes back to, you know, help himself with the code. And so I was immediately like, oh, bootstrap paradox. And then a second later, he says, it's a bootstrap paradox. Like, okay. And he says, basically, the code came from nowhere, but so did the universe. And no one complains about that. Like, okay, whatever.
Honestly, that was the best justification for a bootstrap paradox I've ever heard.
Yeah.
<He's> like, no one ever complains about that.
The plot demands it. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
I do love, that's one of the things that I love about Doctor Who is, it will hand wave away the inconveniences that other sci-fi shows, other time travel shows will really like linger on and they get hung up on them. You know, George R. R. Martin could not figure out a bootstrap paradox. He'd be writing it for 20 years. But but Doctor Who's like, yeah, bootstrap paradox. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's what it is. Wave. Moving on.
Yep. Love it. So I think that was actually my favorite moment in the episode, I got to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was thinking about, you know, the fact that he forces his past self to stay there and quote unquote take the long way around. And I guess, you know, it's to protect the timey-wimey-ness. That's always a thing with Doctor Who. But I was also thinking, do you think it's because he wanted himself to stay and have that experience with Anita?
Yes, I do think so. And that idea also came from nowhere, but that's okay.
What do you mean from, oh.
Like the idea of him staying would have been from the future, which would have been reflecting the past, which didn't happen yet.
Right. So
anyway, but that's okay because we're all good. We're all good.
Nobody complains about the universe, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. It was bootstrappy. It was an emotional bootstrap, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. An emotional bootstrap. That's now I'm thinking of an actual bootstrap. But anyway, So we find out that this case with the star, the idea is there's a single atom in there that's undergoing a chain reaction to create a star as a personal energy source, and it's going to take thousands of years. They need the Time Hotel. So that's when they plant it 65 million years ago when they have like a hut so you can watch the dinosaurs, which is really cool.
It was very Tarzan, right? We got the humans in the little hut on a tree. The wild out there.
Yeah, maybe actually that would be where I'd want to go because I would love to see what the dinosaurs actually look like.
I mean, the construction maintenance bill for that room is like, that is the cost of this hotel. Like, that is their main cost.
Just because the dinosaurs keep wrecking it?
Yes. Absolutely. That's like their biggest budget item. Every time they have a board meeting, they're like, we got to figure out this thing because we just keep losing huts.
At least I guess it's cheaply constructed. It's just literally a wooden hut.
Yeah, that's why nothing else is there. Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's fair.
Yeah. You'd think there could be like a force field or something, but no. You don't get the full experience unless you're actually worried about getting eaten.
Or maybe you always go back to the moment right before it gets eaten. That way you can see the T-Rex live.
Oh, okay. Fair.
You know?
And we find out that Joy's mom died on Christmas and she could only talk to her on an iPad because of the rules, which seems to be a pandemic reference.
It definitely was because we know it was 2020 at the end. They put that label on.
Oh, true. And yeah, and then the doctor starts being really mean to Joy about her hotel room and about being lonely and about her mother. And we find out that he was making her angry to, quote unquote, wake her up. And then the case disconnects itself and she manages to stay alive because she was focused on her anger rather than the mission of the case.
Yeah.
Did that work for you?
Yeah, I think that was a very good way to get her out of it, and felt very believable that if this is the psychic link, he broke the psychic link. Perfect.
Yeah. Yep. And we find out that the villain guard is involved again. So, we've seen that company, that weapons company before, specifically most recently in Boom from last season, which was an excellent episode. Mm-hmm. And then we find out that Trev, who he's dead, but he's also his back.
Yeah. That was another thing that happened in Boom, mm-hmm. was people would die and their consciousness would be uploaded.
Exactly. So it's the same tech that we saw before. And then he says, the psychic graft has been duplicated virtually, and I was able to connect it to the briefcase communication software. Like, sure. Okay. Whatever all that means.
I still don't understand how that works. If just your consciousness was uploaded, it looked like you disintegrated, but whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and then we find out that the case emits a psychic field, which I guess makes sense because that must be how it's connecting to the people that it's taking over. And so based on that, and because of reasons, somehow the doctor finds it inside an ancient human shrine because the case was eaten by the T-Rex. And then at some point, I don't know, they vomited up or pooped it out or died and decomposed around it. But the case was found and it was doing weird things to people. So they ended up putting it in a shrine and worshiping it. Is that what you understood from that?
You know, as my son would say, the dino took a big stinky poop and that's how it got there. I think you're right though on your outline here. That's how it got there. Can I ask you, why does Villain Guard even need to make a new star? There's like millions and millions of stars.
Because this is going to be their private stars that they can just exploit for energy.
But they couldn't do that to any other star?
Apparently not. But also,
there's got to be uninhabited galaxies where they could just do that with a star.
Right. And it's also, shouldn't they be building a Dyson sphere around it if they want to exploit its energy? But we don't see anything about that. So,
yeah, there's going to be a lot of hand waving in this part. And so,
yeah,
which is, again, fine. Like in the Doctor Who Christmas specials are often like this, where they mm-hmm. have like a big plot line that has to be squished into one episode.
Right.
So that's fine. Right. I'm okay with that. Again, we have to judge this based on its genre and its shtick. And this is the Doctor Who shtick. And I'm liking it. The more we talk about this episode, the more I like it. I got to say that.
Okay. That's good. I do have a question, though. So the Doctor wanted to take the case and basically throw it into space so the star can bloom there. And that sounds good to me. Why would the star object to that?
Here's my theory is that its last case carrier would be psychically linked and able to sort of like drive the star to where they want it.
Mm-hmm.
But because I almost said Claire, mm-hmm. because of Dairy Girls, because Joy broke mm-hmm. the psychic link and you had Trev sort of severing it on the inside, that allowed them to at the end say like, oh no, we're free from Villain Guard. Now we can go where we want.
But why would the star not want to be thrown into space to bloom there?
Well, I think it does want to bloom in space.
Uh-huh.
And it would bloom in space. It would do the same thing that Joy did at the end, but it would go to where Villain Guard wanted it so that it would be easily accessible. Okay. Whereas Joy drove it to somewhere that is not easily accessible to Villain Guard. That is just a place where a star should be.
So you think the star is still being influenced by what Villain Guard wants?
I think it would have been if not for Trev's internal hacking and Joy's breaking mm-hmm. of the psychic connection.
Okay.
I think they saved it from Villain Guard's influence. That's my understanding.
Okay. Well, we got like a little mini heist situation where the previous places the Doctor visits all come back and he steals that Everest climbing equipment. He runs it through the train and then he throws like this grappling hook out of the back of the train to attach to a mountain so that the force of the train will rip the cover off of the temple. Which,
yeah, it turns out we just needed a train.
Yeah, it's like that seems overly complex for us.
Yeah.
You know?
But we did get the rope callback too. He's mm-hmm, really good with rope.
Yeah. Oh, true. Good point. The language of ropes.
Yeah, from last Christmas special. So we're mm-hmm. keeping that continuity going.
Yeah, good point. But yeah, we find out Joy, she just, like, she makes a comment. I do like that they foreshadow this when he separates her from the case. She's a little bit sad about it at the time. You know, she's mm-hmm. like, it was actually really nice being a star. I was a star. I felt special. And she says, she gets the case out of this temple and she says, I want the star to live. And she ends up absorbing it into herself. And then, okay. So here's another question. I know I'm trying too hard to apply logic, but let's just pick this apart for a second. So we keep hearing the flesh will rise and the seed will bloom and the flesh will rise. And we find out the flesh rising ends up being Joy carried up into the sky so that she and the other people who have been absorbed by the star can bloom together into this star, and the star will shine everywhere forever. But that was not the intended outcome for Villengard. So why is it that everyone who carries the case is saying this, the flesh will rise? Is that the star speaking for itself?
So I actually, this is what I'm trying to say with the Villengard thing. Mm-hmm. I think that Villengard had a psychic control over the carriers. Until mm-hmm. the doctor broke the connection with Joy and Trev broke the connection internally. And so the plan was always for somebody to do exactly what Joy did and rise up into the sky. Mm-hmm. But they were going to go to the destination of Villengard's choosing.
Okay.
And instead, Joy was able to take the controls, go somewhere else.
Right. And not destroy Earth, which I don't know why Villengard wants to destroy Earth, but it's Villengard. They literally have villain in their name spelled slightly differently. But
same actually, thing. My understanding was that the doctor realized right after the T-Rex incident, like, oh, the last case holder was going to take it off planet. The plan wasn't to destroy Earth. And I interrupted it, it's going to go off without a carrier.
Hmm.
That's why Earth was going to get destroyed.
Okay. Hmm.
Doctor right. accidentally created a big problem. Shocker, well, right?
Joy points out to him before she goes up into the sky that he needs to change too. And she's like, you were making fun of my sad hotel room, but you lived there for a year, dude.
Yeah, she was just going to stay there for a week.
And then we get this nice sequence at the end where, and this is another reason why it's probably a good idea that you've seen the other stuff, because Ruby Sunday, we get a cameo of her watching the star, as her mom calls her. I thought it was going to mm-hmm. be the doctor on the phone maybe, but
I think they were
teasing us on purpose. We see Anita recruited by the Time Hotel, as you said. And yeah, we see that Joy's mom's death in London in 2020. And she seems to have been pulled into the star. Is that how you interpreted it?
Yeah, timey-wimey. She recognizes that Joy is the star. Mm-hmm. She gets pulled into it.
Okay. And of course, then we find out that it's actually, oh, little star of Bethlehem, because it was over the birth of Jesus. So there we go. A touch of religion, but not really.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, I said, at least, like, this never really goes religious in the Doctor Who Christmas specials, but, like, I was like, oh, this is actually, like, the most religious they've ever gotten with it.
Yeah, it's true. We got a nativity moment.
Yeah, very strange. Yeah. I'm glad we didn't go into the actual... There was also a joke earlier on when the Doctor is going through all the things. He goes, oh, you put all the time zones together? No wonder there was no room at the inn.
Uh-huh. Yeah, true. True.
Good joke. Good little Christmas joke.
I have a question, though, where I totally expected Mrs. Flood, because they gave us a teaser with Mrs. Flood dressed in, like, this white fur coat and it's snowing, and I thought she was going to show up in this special, but there was no mention of her.
Yeah, she must be a season two thing. I'll talk more in the production spoilers, because I want to talk about a couple of things in there. You want to do that now?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, listener, look, this is not going to be heavy spoilers. All I really know is who's been cast. Mm-hmm. But skip ahead 3 minutes if you don't want to hear it. All right, now you're gone. So, two things. One, we know that Ruby is back for season two.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have more of that. So, we're going to get more Mrs. Flood, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's going to be season two. But two, we also know the Villengard woman... The soldier in Boom. Hold on, let me just get her name.
Right. We know the Virata Sethu is the actress's name from Andor.
Yes, 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 yes.
We know she's coming back, but we don't know if she's playing the same character, right?
I think she is. I think this Villengar thing is leading us to that.
Okay.
Which I would be really happy with. I think Doctor Who has often not done off-world companions for a long time, where they actually did in Classic Who.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason in New Who, it's very uncommon. I think the only one that we've gotten is, what's his name?
Oh, the one who's played by Jacob Anderson?
Yes, yes.
Does he count as a companion during Whitaker's era?
Oh, no, I'm talking about Nardole.
Oh, Nardole. Oh, right. Oh, I miss him.
Yeah. But so we don't really get off-world companions very often. So I would really like if we could get somebody out of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just traveling with the Doctor.
Yeah. No, I like that too. I hope that they do keep the same character. She was
Mundy Flynn is her name in the show.
Right. Okay.
Played by Barada Sethi.
Right. Because Sunday, yeah. Monday. Because Ruby Sunday. Yeah. Right. Right. He made that joke.
Ruby Sunday's got a case of Mondays. Yeah. Right. That was in my Hot Lore Summer song.
All right.
Well, that's all the production spoilers I have. Yeah. I don't think they've been renewed for season 3 yet. And I would like to see that happen soon because they got to get going on production if they're going to do their annual release like they promised.
Yeah, there was a thing where Nshuti was going to be on like the Graham Norton show, I think, or something like that. And apparently he said something about production work on season 3, but then when the show and that was released as a someone who was there, you know, said, oh, he's gonna talk about this on this show, and then they ended up cutting that part out. So
I don't know.
So I think it probably is in production, but they're just not ready to make an announcement yet. Or it's in pre-production. Yeah. I mean,
it just makes me nervous as a show that was canceled for like 20 years.
Right.
Maybe not 20. It was like 15 years. But still, it was canceled for like 15 years. It's a little scary to see like what's going to happen. We're in a new era now where this is partnership with Disney. And I just hope that the show can go on for another 50 years, you know?
Well, I think that the worst case scenario at this point, what they've said is like worst case scenario is they lose the Disney money and it just goes back to being a BBC only production. So that just the budget goes down a bunch.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that as long as, because for me, it's not the special effects that make the show. It's
right.
The storytelling, it's the camp, it's all of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts on this episode?
I had a lot of fun and I had more fun talking about it than I did at first. So okay. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a lot of fun. I would recommend anybody watch it that wants to. It'll be a fun hour, right? It's just a fun hour.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Great cast. And yeah, my favorite part was that time he spent just being normal with Anita in the hotel. Like Anita really moved me. I genuinely teared up.
Yeah. And I'm glad she had a happy ending.
Yes. I want to work at the Time Hotel. I would do that.
I know, right? Except you're always exposed to the risk of being recruited for a star.
Yeah.
Nonsense. You never know. Well, they do have a lot of openings though.
True. Well, you never know. Because people get eaten by dinosaurs. But do you get, if you are at the Time Hotel, do you get like free overnight stays, maybe one a year or more?
You get three overnight. What? No,
Part of your employee package. That's what I want. That's my demand.
I don't know. It seems very corporate to me. So I want to know the benefits package going in.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to be sucked into something where I'm just delivering pumpkin lattes and ham and cheese toasties that are definitely not paninis to random rooms with no benefits.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, what's the healthcare if, you know, you might get sucked into a starseed?
Yeah, that's true. Although we did have the Silurian saying, did we ever get his name, by the way?
Not really. He's the hotel manager. That's, okay. We know, yeah.
Well, we had Mr. Manager, Arrested Development fans. We'll laugh at that maybe. We had Mr. Manager saying that they were very kind when he was discovered. So any other thoughts for you?
Just that I'm eager for season 2. I'm really excited. Let's bring this on.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah. Or season 15, as it might be called.
Yeah, so, I've given up on that. I'm just going to be like, all right, I'll call it season 2 because that's what it's going to show up on Disney Plus. And I don't want to confuse new people because I think that this show deserves a bigger audience than it has, and I want to recruit more people.
Right. And that will help us get more, too. Well, we definitely want to hear what everyone else thinks about this episode and the upcoming season 2. Please send in your own Doctor Who thoughts via TARDIS@thelorehounds.com. And yeah, what else we got coming up? We've got Dune Prophecy. The final episode just came out. So I guess David and I will be recording. Oh, yeah. We have planned a Hot Takes on December 24th on Christmas Eve. We're going to record. So,
okay.
And then also he just recently put out the Star Trek episode. I think there's going to be more Star Trek stuff coming in the future.
Very nice.
You and Marilyn just recorded the Skeleton Crew mid-season.
Yes, we did. Episode. And I remembered to include your voicemails when I often forget to include voicemails.
With my very important thoughts and theories.
Don't worry. They were good conversation starters too, I got to say.
So, oh, good.
I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but they were fun.
Oh, I didn't even realize it was out, actually.
Yeah.
I have to refresh. I get behind on podcasts when I'm visiting my family. And also, Wicked's coming out and Joker 2 plus Joker versus Madcap. That's going to be out right after Christmas. I just have to wrap up doing the Wool Shift Us Christmas episodes. But I saw you put out the last of the Netflix Christmas verse episodes.
Yes, I put it out for patrons already, but it'll be public by the time this drops. So
okay,
you can enjoy our little secret and hot frosty.
Right. And subscribers get access to extra Christmas episodes, the Christmas Prince and the Princess Switch, and the usual Elevensies and Second Breakfast, where we talk about breakfast foods and life and what's going on and everything. Peek behind the curtains. On Wool Shift Dust,
we have on Christmas Day, so this will already be out, our top 10 Second Breakfast, which is public.
Oh, right, everybody. Right. Okay, true, on the public feed, yeah. And Wool Shift Us, there's also a Christmas Carol series going on, so that should all be out by the time this comes out. And also, of course, ongoing Silo coverage that's continuing through January 17th is when the episodes are airing. Do also check out the rest of the network, the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast from me. Properly Howard is doing a few good films right now. Radioactive Ramblings is doing Ghibli and Red Rising and Arcane. I think they just released the last Arcane episode. Nevermind the Music is combining psychology and music. And catch up on Severance Season 1 on this separate Severance feed, because January is when Season 2 is starting. Are you excited for that?
I've been emailing Apple every 2 weeks. Can I have my screeners, please? But they're not ready yet. I'm so excited. They're like, thanks, John. Can you write back in a few weeks? And I'm like, no!
I'm excited to listen to you guys. I'm glad to. I'll be happy to be off weekly stuff. Although, right after that, the award season starts, so I'm going to be doing an awards series again.
Nice. I'm gonna be rewatching, and then there's also apparently a prequel short story that I have to read before season 2. So I'm gonna be
there's a prequel short story for Severance.
Yep.
Oh, prequel okay. To season I need one. To get on.
It's
I need to get on that as well.
It's a different office. It sounds like.
Okay. Oh, that's really exciting. Okay, I'm gonna look that up.
Yeah, I had no idea until I saw a TikTok about it.
Okay.
and rest in peace, TikTok. I'll miss you.
Is it officially done?
It will be done January 19th. Nobody's intervened. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean,
Supreme Court
seems
said no,
unbelievable.
We're not going to put an injunction in.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I didn't invest myself in there, but Blue Sky's great. It's no TikTok videos, but.
Well, you could still use it where you are. You just can't do it in the U.S.
That's true. All right, shall we do our shout outs?
Yes, let's do it. Marilyn was really pleased with the music I used last time, so I'm going to use it again to make Marilyn happy.
All right, do you want to do the names?
Yes, as soon as I have loaded up my. Here we go. All right. I'm trying to stall so that it can load in. All right. Our Discord server boosters. Aaron K. Killer the Thriller. Dork of the Ninjas. Doove 71. Athena A. Tina. Lestu. Nancy M. Ghost of Partition. Radioactive Richard. Samartian. Michael G. Michelle E. Brian P., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Doom 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Garrett C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andre B., Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dally V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Listu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., and Adrian. Thanks, everyone. It's been a lovely year.
I see why Marilyn likes the music.
It's fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it's soothing, too.
Yeah. Well, thanks, everyone. It's been a timey-wimey year, and it's always nice to have your support, whether you're a subscriber or just a listener. Rate and review us if you're just a listener. That's what you could do for us. It's free.
Yes. And yeah, thank you. And happy holidays, everyone. And a happy new year.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.